Trace Hillis, and this is The Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. It seems at times that the conversation around renewable energy often centers on wind and solar, but let's be honest, sometimes the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine. So what does reliable renewable energy look like? Senator Matt Behnke of Richland joins me now. You've been learning and thinking a lot lately about two sources of renewable energy, nuclear and hydro. And I thought we'd start with nuclear because you've toured a couple of facilities and you're kind of learning about what's new and exciting about nuclear, right?
I am, Tracy, and thanks for having me on board today. I think this is my first one in the Elephant in the Dome series. So it's an honor and privilege to be with you and help the listeners get a lot about understanding the concepts and process we're looking at and really educating people and sharing that knowledge about what are the options in the clean energy space. And we call it that because it's not only nuclear, it's advanced nuclear, the safety issues that people have with nuclear power, the waste with any kind of product that we're going to try to site, permit, or even generate electricity to be reliable in the state of Washington. So yeah, you mentioned a couple tours I've been on with the national labs right here in Richland with Pacific Northwest National Lab and Department of Energy hosted a lot of our legislators, the Senate Energy Caucus committee chair, as well as some of our staff members to go out and really understand what our mission is with the labs, the innovation that's going on, the research development, and also the impact. So whether it's solar with, I think, Senator Wilson's bill about what we do when the wind farms come in, how do we dispose of these solar wind farms and things that end of life cycle, but also nuclear power, how we can get that into the clean energy future to meet our needs of the clean goals of 2030 and 2040 that the state is looking at for the clean energy transformation.
With nuclear, it seems we hear a lot about these small nuclear reactors. I think they're called small modular nuclear reactors there or something like that. I'm certainly not a nuclear scientist. And so I doubt many of our viewers and listeners are either. Can you break this down in an easy to understand way for us?
Yeah, the small modular reactors or advanced nuclear, they're kind of synonymous as a new technology that's been growing over the last 50 years since the originator of the first nuclear power plant in the U.S. We developed a lot of the techniques and lessons learned of how to produce and generate nuclear power safely. Some have been in boiling water reactors, light water reactors, or pressure treated, different methods within that. The nuclear have to do the compression without getting too much in the chemistry with uranium and critical minerals that we're harvesting from around the world and trying to bring to the U.S. to make this chemical reaction. Small modular gets into the newer way of doing this in a carbon shell based system, and even some are liquefying this to where it can be reused in small, so 100 to 200 megawatt systems, to where we can then place those in areas that are needed the most, or a higher density area that can be limited in size, but also allow us to generate the kind of reliable energy that you were talking about. So when it rains, snows, when the sun's not out or the wind's not blowing, we can produce reliable generation that is clean and that's safe. And these small modulars come in a six pack. So you can do the first either one, two, three, think of it that way, like a six pack of soda. You can pick three of them if you need to. They're adaptable to where you can go up to six. And even some states, we were in a tour this last week with the National Conference of State Legislators. The Nuclear Working Group hosted us at Idaho National Labs, and they're showcasing several are buying a 12 pack. So you can add on to it if you need a lot more megawatts, or you can even downsize and have that flexibility within that range. And the other piece I would add is there's about 10 different vendors out there working towards this competitive grant that the Department of Energy is helping forecast the innovation over the next 10 years. We're going to have them starting 2 years from now, actually plants in place. And with us in the state of Washington, look at as we shut down coal plants, like we're having the one shut down and decommissioned, we leverage a lot of the current infrastructures into possibly a nuclear small modular reactor.
Yeah, Tinder, I was going to ask you, how are we doing in Washington compared to other parts of the country, or I guess other parts of the world? And those are certainly two separate conversations. But, you know, I know in where you are in Richland, that's kind of an epicenter for a lot of this, right?
It is.
And we're talking about it here in Washington, but, you know, we still have a long ways to go too, right?
We do. And that's the whole thing, which we're hopefully it comes sooner. But we want to make sure we're following the right safety steps with the environmental siting, permitting, and everybody having the discussion with stakeholders that are impacted. We're reaching out to the tribes. So they have a seat at the table, as well as a lot of the environmental groups that are concerned that we don't have the issues we had in the 50s, 60s, or maybe some of the concerns overseas in other countries. I tell people our safety record is second to none. Our nation puts in more safety from the get-go, the beginning all the way through the process of creating and manufacturing of the site, the equipment that's going on board, the certification of the individuals, and even the labor unions that are involved in helping support the plant operations. And then the decommissioning piece. Probably more than any other country, we have safety first and foremost and paramount in each one of these companies that are doing this. But also in the Department of Energy, and you mentioned in Richland, we've been living with nuclear power since the 50s. I grew up here in the Tri-Cities, had a father and in-laws that all worked at nuclear power plant, and myself as well, worked about a little less than 2 years at Columbia Generating Station, and really know how safe it is and the operations that we've done to create reliable energy for the Northwest.
Talking with Senator Matt Behnke, I know that China, for example, seems to be moving a little bit more aggressively in this area than here in the United States. Are we already behind?
I believe we are. And that's a great point, Tracy, to get out to the customers and people that are looking into this as maybe a negative. We're losing the big nationwide or worldwide global effort on clean energy to China and even France, and some of the European countries already seeing they need to upload their energy independence from being resolute to other countries to have them solvent and reliable into their own country, but also be control of that, where if there's any other nation state that may be threatening the reliability of the grid or the crops in their fields, how we can leverage that manufacturing all comes back to what kind of power consumption we have and where it's generated from. China's doubled their increase of generation. They already have these small modular reactors being built. I think there was 20 on the projects in the next 5 years over there, and then more to follow from there as they continue to grow that. And they're already looking at shipping that power to some of their friends that are not really our friends in the whole global construct.
Still have a ways to go, obviously, but where we don't have a ways to go, where we've always led the nation and in some ways the world here in Washington State, is with hydropower. We produce a lot of it right now. Again, we've been doing it for a while. How big of a part of our power grid, I guess, is hydro?
I want to say it's about 10 to 15% of hydro. But the key point, though, Tracy, to tell the listeners is that it's a baseload power that when the wind doesn't blow or the sun doesn't shine, we have to fall back on this baseload power that gives us that reliability across the board. This helps us defend against blackouts, brownouts, or any surges in the energy system. And it's tied into the Bonneville Power Supply Network of the Northwest. So we're looking at power all the way down to California and up into British Columbia and as far east as Montana, Idaho, Utah, Nevada. So we have to look at that in a West Coast construct. But yeah, it relies a lot on the baseload power, and specifically out of our lower Snake River dams. Along with that, of course, is the great advantages that it provides us locally. I lived up when we had flood damages throughout, where the floods were coming through the cities. We were worried about concerning the water would rise too much on the Columbia River, and that we couldn't have the sustainability. Houses were underwater and a lot of other concerns. That has been mitigated by a lot of these systems that were built along with the dams to ensure quality of water control. And then, of course, taking a lot of trucks off the roads is a good thing. Taking the carbon footprint of a lot of those trucks to get our international trade and keep our international trade as top as we can when we're in a large sector of the ag community in Eastern Washington, trying to get that to ports and the international market. I know we all love our cherries, apples, grapes, you name it, but we want to get them out there as soon as possible and do it in a way to where it is limited impact to the economy, but also limited impact to our roads. And then, of course, the air that we breathe. So a lot of that's the transportation along the waterways where we can use the transport of the barge systems. And we can leverage that on a timely fashion to where we know we're supporting a resilient supply chain as well. And supply chain attacks have been issues in the past of where ports had to be shut down or had to wait for a lot of the goods and services we've had in the past. But now we can confirm that, have a reliability of the backup within it, and then work together for everybody. And I believe that's the critical nature of keeping the dams where they're at, showcasing what the concerns are about fish and the reliability, how we can work together, and survivability of almost 95% of the fish going up and down the river streams are increasing each year, working with our fish biologists, the fish teams that are tagging fish, tracking where the fish go and spawn, then how they return back so we can help multiply those numbers for everybody in the state of Washington.
Yeah, we're talking about these Snake River dams now and how some want to remove them to help fish. It's interesting because I've heard you talk before, you're not insensitive to the plight of salmon, right? I mean, you're someone who definitely cares about that species. So, but you also mentioned, people may not realize this, and you touched on it, but the barges, for example, I mean, half of the transportation is just floating down the river, basically, you know? So you don't have any, there's really no carbon involved in that. There's also the power generation, which is clean. And you mentioned some of the other things too, agriculture and flight control. You touched on a number there that I thought was interesting when talking about fish. You said, you know, something about 95%. What do you mean by that?
Well, over the years, and I appreciate you seeing the complexity of when somebody wants to tear down the dams, what the real impact is going to be. And you're right. When I grew up as a kid, first thing my father always taught me and his grandfather taught him was fishing and hunting and getting out and supporting our community by doing that. And it's really a resilience, not only with families, but also the way we can leverage a system of survivability you want to pass down to the next generation. I want to make sure there's several fish, there's plenty of fish that are spawning, respawning. And really, it's a livelihood of the river system and the ecosystem that it evolves into. If we help maintain a vibrant ecosystem within our rivers, it's going to help the fish, the spawning, the growth of the areas that we can help clean the water, not only helps clean the air that it's around, and we want to continue to do that. That's frankly why I believe the 8th District is the best district in the state of Washington for your listeners. Pretty proud of that area, and a big piece of that is growing up in around a vibrant river system. When you mentioned that other piece of when the barges float downstream, it literally is carbon free. So it is reducing by half the numbers where it's increased so much more of the trucks and things that are on the road. But we track fish, back to your fish, and the numbers of 98-95%. I can tell that because every fish is being tracked through their dam system when it goes through a ladder. I used to work when I first got out of the military down at what's called McNary Dam. For a year and a half, we were down there tracking what was going on with $25 million on a ladder system to allow the fish to bypass the actual generation of those blades. When the fish come through the ladder, they go swim around it, come out the other end, and they increase the numbers to where they can get downstream a lot easier. When they're coming upstream, it's an easy swim that it's a gradual increase instead of a large slope where those fish have to swim upstream. We allowed it an opportunity to increase the number to get upstream because of the areas we can not only see through those ladders, but now working with Pacific Northwest National Labs, we put in what's called little microchips into fish, and we can watch fish that are spawned through a fish lab, swim upstream, go to the spawning area and come back, and we can track those areas. And what they're doing is then using that data to allow a transparent and accountable system of really is our return on investment, the money we're spending in these fish labs, actually working, the ladders working, is the whole transportation being effective on the survivability rate? And we're seeing that 95, 96% across the board.
I would recommend if people get a chance to go to the Tri-Cities and check out some of the things that are going on there. And with all these things that we've talked about today, I toured it a couple of years ago. I was shocked by all the innovation that's happening there. It really is. It's pretty unique, isn't it? Because of, you know, where the nuclear situation there, and there's you mentioned the river and everything else. It just, there is a lot of stuff happening there, isn't there?
There is. And I would appreciate you highlighting that to all the listeners that are out there. We love every part of our state, of course, but I'm pretty proud of the 8th District and what the 8th, 15th, 16th, and the 9th, literally that encompass around the Tri-Cities, has been doing with Department of Energy and really our Chamber of Commerce and a lot of really great volunteers of our community. We've leveraged not only the nuclear power, but showcases that to what it can impact our medical isotope industry to help people live longer, reduce cancer, identify cancer impacts in the individuals with our medical treatment facilities that we have, but explore deep space. So we have the LIGO system, the longitudinal integrational gravitational area of our state that works with Louisiana. And this LIGO effort can actually see into deep space to identify black holes and collisions of stars that would bring back ideas and things that we can leverage of what would impact here on Earth. Along with that, it inspires the next generation of showcasing what you can do coming from a small Eastern Washington rural town. Whether you want to fly helicopters, go play on the computer games, or defend our networks in these computer attacks that are hitting us, you can do that as well. And then that piece also encompasses the innovation and the research and development out of Pacific Northwest National Lab that spurs a lot of, I think it's over 100 patents each month. And then from there goes into critical areas of biology, chemistry, the fish we talked about, but also the innovations of autonomous vehicles. Whether it's the drone systems, leveraging that with agriculture, we have autonomous tractors now and motivating those things to where we can keep people out of harm's way, but leverage it to enhance our society and make it a better place for each and every one of us.
Pretty cool. Thanks so much, Senator. Really appreciate Senator Babicki with me.
Thank you, Tracy.
This is the Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. I'm Tracy Ellis.